This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 5th of October 2018. Hello, and a very warm welcome to you for this week's edition of the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper, where we read extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle. I'm Peter Lydiard, your presenter for today, standing in for John Parker. Now, editors this week are Anne Few, Angela Ling, Carol Fraser and Jane Thomas. And I'm joined by our three readers for this week, Tony Bergstrom.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Barbara Kearns.
Hello.
Well, first, our regular notices. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. That is 01962 711 998. When you've finished listening to the recording, please put the memory stick in the yellow envelope, also putting your address labelled inside the envelope, and pop it in the post. No stamp required, thank you. And just to remind you that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, you might like to know that as well as using the memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. And you can listen to it off the website or download the recording to listen to it later. Or you can even plug the memory stick into the USB port on your computer. So we move on to the main headlines for this week, which are prison slated over squalid conditions, major scheme may create 1,100 jobs, and crucial blueprint is finally adopted. So, Tony, what's all this about?
Prison slated over squalid conditions.
Yes.
Winchester Prison has been slammed following its latest inspection that found that prisoners were locked up for 23 hours a day in squalid conditions. The inspection, carried out by the Independent Monitoring Board, IMB, said that inmates were not always treated humanely, despite the best efforts of staff, and the facility was little more than a prisoner warehouse. Among the other findings in the highly critical report were staff shortages have limited searches, leading to an increase in drugs and contraband. Disabled prisoners cannot access basic facilities. A lack of opportunities inside and services outside the prison means prisoners are not well prepared for release. A restricted regime prevents prisoners from having sufficient time to shower, exercise, make phone calls, or clean their surroundings. Angus Somerville, chairman of HMP/YOI, Winchester IBM, said HMP/YOI Winchester is little more than an establishment which fulfills the function of warehousing prisoners. But we feel that much of what is wrong with the prison comes down to a lack of funding and resources. This means that the good work we do see happening in Winchester is patchy. While the total number of uniformed staff, has risen during the period, there is no substitute for experience. In May this year, 45% to 60% of uniformed officers on the wings had less than 1 year's experience in their grade. This, coupled with the dire state of the prison's fabric, the frustration of prisoners and prevalence of drugs, creates a highly stressful atmosphere. Monitors say that although the prison was placed in special measures in January, it's hard to see any significant improvement given staff shortages, lack of resources, and the high level of prisoner and staff turnover. The IBM suggests that one solution to poor recruitment and retention would be for staff to be given the same pay increase officers in nearby prisons have received. The report came as the government's Justice Secretary, David Gawke, announced a financial crime unit would be launched to stop drug dealing in prisons making money. At the Conservative Party conference taking place this week, Mr. Gawke also set out plans to boost prisoner rehabilitation and funding to help educate young offenders. Mr. Gawke told party members on Tuesday, "My message to kingpins in this, we are already blocking your phones, putting you in isolation, and now we will make sure you can't access your money. Dealing drugs in prison will no longer be profitable because we will find your assets and we will seize them." Meanwhile, he said more prisoners will be given training to help them get into work once they're released, and 5 million will create the first secure school to improve the education of young offenders. Getting prisoners rehabilitated will reduce crime and ensure there are fewer victims of crime in future. It will also cut the $15 billion cost that reoffending has on society. We know that offenders are far less likely to reoffend if they have a job. That is why I launched the Education and Employment Strategy, which will expand opportunities for offenders to get education and skills training and work experience so they can get a job when they go out. However, Shadow Justice Secretary Richard Bergen said, "These measures fall way short of what is needed to tackle the emergency in our prisons. Our prisons are facing an unprecedented wave of violence due to conservative cuts to budgets and staffing levels. The government needs to go much further than these wholly inadequate measures. It should launch an emergency action plan with substantial new treasury funds to make our prisons safe." The Chronicle approached the Ministry of Justice for comment about the report on Winchester Prison last Thursday, but is yet to receive a response.
Thank you, Tony. Just for clarification, for those who don't know, YOI stands for Youth Offenders Institute. Something like that, yes. Right, thank you, John.
Yes, major scheme may create 1,100 jobs. A major city centre project could create more than 1,000 new jobs in Winchester when complete, according to a new City Council report. The Station Approach Scheme, which is now in its second incarnation after the initial project collapsed 2 years ago, aims to see the area around the train station, including the Carfax and cattle market sites, redeveloped. Now, a report claims 1,110 jobs could be created through one of the major elements of the scheme, the creation of new offices in the city centre. The report, which went before Winchester City Council's Station Approach Committee on Thursday, says, "It remains clear that there is significant market interest in high-quality Grade A offices in Winchester, an offer which is currently substantially lacking in the city. The Carfax site, adjacent to the station, remains the prime location for such provision, giving full opportunity to create a new gateway hub in this location and help substantial wider economic regeneration." According to the update, the scheme now has support from both the Hampshire Chamber of Commerce and Hampshire County Council, HCC. Mark Balch, head of policy and representation at the Chamber of Commerce, said, "Several of our members have expressed specific interest in better office space in the city, especially close to public transport services." Mr. Balch added that one business had been forced to move out of the city due to the current shortfall. David Fletcher, Assistant Director for Economic Development at HCC, added, "Station Approach offers an exciting opportunity to significantly refresh the city's credentials as a business location and as a commercial centre." The report also states that a planning application is proposed for submission in March.
Thank you, John. Barbara, please.
Crucial blueprint is finally adopted. Plans for a major regeneration of Winchester City have been officially adopted, civic chiefs have confirmed. Winchester City Council has confirmed that as no challenges were lodged against the supplementary planning document, SPD, for the Silver Hill 2 scheme, officially known as the Central Winchester Regeneration, CWR, project, the document has been fully adopted. Since the plans were provisionally adopted in June, the City Council has already begun implementing changes in the 4.5-hectare area, which includes the bus station, the Broadway, St Clement's Medical Centre, King's Walk, Friars Gate Car Park, the former Antique Market Building and Wool Staplers Hall. As previously reported, the former Antique Market Building has been taken over by creative group Nutshell Arts and has been rebranded as The Nutshell. It will be used as a place for rehearsals, workshops, exhibitions and small-scale productions, alongside resident companies, the Discarded Nut Theatre Company and Encore Youth Theatre. The move represented one of the short-term aims for improving the Silver Hill area. In addition, New Gin Workshop, the Blend Academy, run by Winchester Distillery, opened in the space above Poundland in Middlebrook Street this week. Councillor Caroline Horrell, City Council leader and chairman of the CWR committee, said, "There is much to do, and the committee is energised and determined to move forward apace." Following the collapse of the first scheme with the development partner THRE, the City Council is proposing in the SPD to develop the area in a more piecemeal fashion. The THRE scheme, mainly offices, flats and parking, was derided for being too big for the city centre.
Thank you, Barbara. Well, a quick rundown of what follows. We start with the death notices. Then we have Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, Chronicle comment, Ron Allison's column, letter from a Westminster, Belgarum, historical items, what's on, lighting up times, and then general news. So the death notices. Blakeman, Enid Blakeman, at Countess Mountbatten Hospice, 23rd of September, aged 83.
Broad, Michael Broad, peacefully at home on the 18th of September, aged 91.
Edwards, Lillian Edwards, née Charland, peacefully in Worcestershire Royal Hospital on the 12th of September.
Francis, June Francis, known as Edith, peacefully on the 20th of September, aged 91.
Marshall, Philip Marshall, formerly of the National Trust and Broadlands Estate, at home, 23rd of September, aged 57.
Moody, Elizabeth Ann Moody, née Mills, peacefully at Flowerdown Care Home after a long illness, aged 68 years.
Pervin, Amanda Jane Pervin, née Hobden, peacefully at Countess Mountbatten Hospice on the 21st of September, aged 55.
Robinson, Andress Callahan Robinson, on the 21st of September, aged 91.
Smith, Margaret Doreen Smith, on the 29th of September at Brendan Care, Knightwood, aged 90.
Swain, Isabella Swain, peacefully on the 25th of September, aged 74.
Target, Peter Henry Target, peacefully on the 21st of September, aged 82.
Tet, Ashley John Tet, on the 25th of September, aged 64.
Thank you. We now go on to Christian comment, written this week by Liz Tatham. Tony, please.
And the title is The Importance of Angels. This weekend, in my church's calendar, was the feast of Archangels Michael, Raphael and Gabriel. I thought I would try and find out some more about them and angels generally. There have been various descriptions of the hierarchy of angels from the Abrahamic religions, who all also recognize these three archangels. In Christianity, the most influential hierarchy put forward was from Pseudo-Dionysius in the 4th, 5th century, and later Thomas Aquinas, drawing on the New Testament, also developed a schema of three orders. These hierarchies include seraphim, cherubim, thrones, and dominions. And although it is a little confusing, the archangels, at least, sit above ordinary angels. An angel is a supernatural being, generally benevolent, unless they fall, but this is about the good ones, who act as intermediaries between God and his creation. Amongst these particular three, they each have a role to play. Michael is portrayed as a warrior, often dressed in Roman soldier garb in paintings, and leads God's heavenly host in the battle against evil. According to the book of Revelation, he will appear in the last days and has appeared in the scripture of a number of religions, including the Bible's books of Daniel, Jude, and Revelation. Gabriel is a messenger, and it was he who appeared to Mary in Luke's Gospel to ask her to be the mother of Jesus. The incarnation of God and Gabriel also played a part in the life of Daniel in the Old Testament. Raphael, the healer, is also recognized in the three Abrahamic religions and is the soothing, healing member of the archangel group. Excuse me. What are we to make of all this? Myth and legend or truth, derived from centuries of scripture and tradition, from not just one, but at least three religions. Angels certainly seem to have been around in tradition, and there have been sightings and apparitions over several millennia. Mont Saint-Michel, for example, is named after him, after his appearance there in the Middle Ages. It's comforting to think that they're on our side and come from God. In Winchester Cathedral, some of the icons behind the retro choir are archangels, identified by the antennae at the base of their necks, it looks like locks of hair, as they have a direct line to God. They can hear him and do his bidding. Perhaps we would all benefit from having the same. While there, walk along a bit and sit in the Guardian Angels Chapel and look up at the angel images looking over you. Guardian angels are another comforting thought, and one that I've always found overwhelming in terms of the vast army needed to look after all of us people over thousands of years. But perhaps overthinking is not required. What should we believe? There is something in it for me with the long-held traditions and scriptures that somehow God has angels in his amazing creation. What counts, though, is that in the end, all of us, angels, dominions, powers, and earthly beings, will sit equally and finally at the feet of our God and exist in his peace. This was Liz Tatham.
Thank you, Tony. Now we go on to letters to the editor. Now, last time I presented this paper, I'd commented that there was a complete lack of letters about Brexit. Well, this week we have several. Hurrah! I hear you cry. As well as the usual miscellany of subjects in the other letters. So, John, if you could give us a start, please.
Yes, this one is entitled Need for Mandates, a very strong opinionated letter by a man called Ian Stenning. Sir, Sarah Ashcroft's letter made sad reading, Chronicle, September the 20th. For Mr. Brine to be so insensitive as to draw attention to his concluding remarks in his 2015 speech beggars belief. Possibly she expected too much from someone who disregards the views of those who elected him. It is he and his ilk who, by slavishly following their leader without question, are responsible for our current predicament. Mrs. May is obstinate and tenacious, sometimes admirable qualities, but the Conservative Party leadership is failing to see the bigger picture. My parents were paid-up working-class members of the Conservative Party. I followed suit, even as a student in Liverpool in the 1960s, believing the Conservatives to be the party of common sense as opposed to the other parties whom I regarded as mischief-makers. The boot is now, however, on the other foot. Unless the party changes its stance and gives the electorate the opportunity to make a better informed judgment on Brexit, its days as a serious political party in government are numbered. What scientist or other professional would rely on seriously flawed data obtained over 2 years ago without seeking to review it? He would be laughed out of court, if not sued for negligence. David Cameron failed us by, in the interests of his party, promoting a Brexit referendum and then not seeking an entrenched majority of two-thirds of the vote, which is often the norm when a change of constitution is sought. Mrs. May has done nothing during her period of office but to compound the problem when she should have been focusing her otherwise very bright mind elsewhere. To hear her say that to change direction would result in the public losing trust in politicians was laughable. What planet is she on? The sooner the government and our MP recognise this and seek a better informed and more up-to-date mandate, the better will be the prospects of the Conservative Party and the morale of the country, coincidentally improving the respect that the electorate once had for its MPs, irrespective of the result. That's from Ian Stenning, Legion Lane, Kingsworthy.
Thank you, John. Barbara, please.
And this is embarrassing. Sir, I have taken your paper for 3 decades. Never have I been more embarrassed to be a Chronicle reader than when reading the letters sitting next to my German wife. I saw Uber Alles over a letter from Karen McCleary decrying President Macron of France and implying Germany imposes its will on the French and rest of Europe. While the letter's content is self-evidently absurd, what could possibly have inspired you to stick Uber Alles over the top? If this is a reference to Deutschland über alles, the German national anthem lyrics in use in the Nazi period, your clumsy and unwarranted sideswipe is as gratuitously insulting as it is ignorant and anachronistic. The official lyrics for the German national anthem start Einigkeit und Recht und Freiheit, unity and justice and freedom. And that is from Don West of Woodfield Drive, Winchester.
Thank you, Barbara. Tony?
This is entitled Alfred and Brexit. Sir, King Alfred hanged Viking invaders from the city walls. To imagine he'd want to be part of an organisation that included the Danes is therefore perhaps unlikely, to say the least. He is, however, an icon of the city and so belongs to all of us, no matter what our political persuasion or none. So please stop using him as a political slogan. Apart from anything else, he died over 1,100 years ago. To seek to attach him to any modern movement is intellectually dubious, to put it mildly. And this is from A.P. Lodge, Takedown Meads, Winchester.
Thank you, Tony. John, please.
Now, that letter was entitled Alfred and Brexit. This was entitled Brine and Brexit from Nick Ray. Sir, can Steve Brine confirm if, when and how many of the Brexit impact statements he has read, and to what extent? Given the apparent content of these, that Winchester voted to remain in the EU, and that Mr. Brine's government still cannot agree what leave means, I'm confused why our MP isn't in the vanguard of demanding a people's vote to mandate the democratic will of the people. So writes Nick Ray, Fordington Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
Thank you, John. Barbara?
This is complacent. Sir, the most predictable aspect of the CQC report on Hampshire hospitals is the complacent and dismissive attitude of our MP Steve Brine, from the Chronicle in September 27th. As a junior health minister, his comment, "The CQC report is worrying but not a huge surprise," is a savage indictment of his department's underfunding of the NHS as a proportion of GDP. The Tory government are responsible for patient safety and Sandor's decline in the trust. In 2015, the trust was good, with caring rated as outstanding. It is now requiring improvement overall. The wholesale underfunding of the NHS is a Tory responsibility. Currently, extreme pressure is being put on senior NHS clinicians to find savings before the autumn budget to mitigate funding increases. This work requires reconfiguration and severe expenditure reduction to gain future minimum maintenance funding. The backdrop to this is monumental national staff shortages. 11.8% nurse posts vacant, equaling 42,000. 9.3% doctor posts vacant, equaling 11,500. And 9.2% overall staff shortage. In total, NHS vacancies equal 108,000 staff. The King's Fund and NHS providers describe this situation as a national emergency. The four-hour A&E target waiting times reduced from 95% in 2014 to less than 84% in 2017, scrapped during the last winter's crisis. Between 2010 and 2016, the Tories allowed just above 1% per annum in annual NHS funding increases. The Labour governments between 1997 and 2010 funded at least 6% annual increases. The UK spends the lowest proportion of GDP on its health services compared to all EU countries. No wonder the NHS is in crisis. And that was from Peter Rees of the Winchester Labour Party, Monarch Way, Winchester.
Thank you, Barbara. Tony.
Partisan MP. Sir, George Hollingbury, MP accuses opponents of mischief-making, Chronicle September the 20th, protests too much. By sending out a letter at public expense on the eve of the Upper Meon Valley by-election, on a key issue in the election, motorbike noise, principally on the A32 and the A272, is stretching cynicism to say that he was not trying to influence voters going to the polls on Thursday, September the 20th. He carefully avoided naming his party's candidate and added to the cost by widening the distribution beyond Upper Meon Valley, although excluding key areas affected by the problem. But he praised the work of his party's local representatives, who have actually achieved nothing over the past few years. The noise problem is getting worse. Local authorities are obliged to follow a period of purdah in not making announcements, which could influence opinions during local election periods. Even if the Standards Commissioner does not rule against his use of probably £4,000 of public money, Mr. Hollingbury would be well advised to follow similar practice when using public money in this way. His actions will have weakened his reputation with local electors by behaving in this partisan way and by using public money to do it. It indicates how worried the Conservatives were about losing this by-election, and they nearly did. This is from Ben Stone and Wickham Road in Droxford.
Thank you, Tony. John, please.
Yes, this letter from Patricia Fennell, or Fennell, however she likes to say it, is non-political. You'll be pleased to hear. Sir, I agree entirely with the sentiments expressed by Councillor Eileen Berry, Chronicle, September the 20th, about the impatience of some drivers and their total disregard for wildlife. It appears that some people who travel on rural lanes and roads have no concern or understanding of wildlife in general, or indeed of their continued existence. They travel at unsafe speeds without regard for other drivers or wildlife and are oblivious to the risks. Currently, 60% of fatalities occur on country roads, so what hope is there for our wildlife? I would like to think that the individual who hit a stag would have sought assistance from a vet to prevent needless suffering of this poor animal, but had this been the case, the animal would have been removed immediately. If you travel on main roads or motorways early in the morning, you often see dead foxes and badgers. Rather disturbingly, some of these have been run over very close to the verge or on the hard shoulder. Many species of birds and animals are reducing in numbers or are on the verge of extinction, and we should all do our best to protect them before it's too late. We all need nature in our lives. That's from Patricia Fennell, Compton Street, Compton.
John, Barbara.
And here's a nice thank you. Sir, I am writing to tell you about an incident that happened on August the 29th in Winchester and to thank all the people who helped me. I was walking down Hyde Street towards Kingsworthy at around 2 to 2:30 p.m. It was a completely normal day until a car was coming towards town and didn't give way to a lorry, which caused the lorry to swerve to avoid hitting the car. But unfortunately, the wing mirror hit the back of my head from behind. I was knocked to the ground and completely shaken. I wasn't alone for any time, because two gentlemen and a couple of other people from Sarson Printers sat by me, called 999, and looked after me. I can't remember everyone's names, but I remember Henry, who gave me his jacket, and was at my side within seconds of the incident happening. Within a few minutes, the ambulance arrived, and again, I can't remember their names, but they were absolutely incredible, and they looked after me whilst I went into shock and listened to everything I said to make sure I was okay and as comfortable as I could be. They were wonderful and reassuring, and I just wanted to make sure they got the recognition that they deserve. Then, once I got to A&E, the staff there were amazing and so helpful. I just wanted to say thank you to everyone who helped me. And that was from Grace Reed of Linway Kingsworthy. And I hope she's feeling a lot better now.
Yeah. Indeed, yes. Thank you, Barbara. Tony.
And I have a second thank you letter about all these kind people in Winchester. Sir, may I, through your letters page, thank the very kind man who handed in my handbag at Sainsbury's Badger Farm at lunchtime on Thursday, September the 20th. In a moment of total distraction, I had left it hanging on the shopping trolley as I put it in the trolley park, and then drove off to get some petrol, where I discovered that my handbag was missing. I am so grateful that there are still kind and honest people in the world, and I would like to say a huge thank you to this man for taking my handbag and all its contents to the customer service desk in Sainsbury's. You are a complete gentleman, sir. And that's from Sandra Holroyd, Downs Road, South Wanston.
Thank you, Tony. It's quite nice to get some heartwarming stories and it's all this doom and gloom. John, what have you got?
Yes, this is an upbeat letter too, entitled Pride of Place, and it's from Simon Lever. Sir, every time I walk into the city centre, I experience a tangible sense of pride. The well-managed city finances allow for investment in projects that would otherwise be a fantasy are in fact a reality. From the Sports and Leisure Centre to the revamp of St Morris's Covert, Chronicle September the 20th, such plans are a credit to those dedicated to further enhancing Winchester's standing as a city that not only attracts vital income from visitors for local businesses, but invests in housing and addresses the quality of life for older residents, of which Chesil Lodge is an example. Winchester is well cared for, vibrant, and welcoming. That's from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
Thank you, John. Barbara?
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear.
This is irresponsible. Sir, it is irresponsible of the Guildhall Winchester to have so many alcohol festivals. They ruin Winchester High Street during those weekends. All you end up with is loads of drunken people walking through the streets, shouting and hollering like slobs, and ruining the high street for others. There are loads of mums and dads with their children who don't want to see such things. Whoever is in charge of the Guildhall should stop having these stupid, irresponsible alcohol festivals. So says Paul Hickey of Sussex Street, Winchester.
Yes, so, yeah. From the sublime to the core blimey there, Tony.
Open day success. Sir, I agree entirely with Nicky Gottlieb that if the events of Heritage Open Days are to continue next year, then a team from various organisations in the city are essential to help and support the hard work that Nicky and Becky have so successfully achieved over the past few years, culminating in the biggest and best open days ever. The glorious hot weather was an added bonus. Chronicle, September the 20th. Although these heritage days have been going for several years, I've been involved through the Theatre Royal, it wasn't until Nicky came along about 4 years ago that they began to take off. Then last year, Becky came on board to assist, resulting in outstanding success. So I implore local organisations to help these two delightful ladies, I've got to know them quite well, to keep up the good work and make the Heritage Open Days of 2019 even more successful. Go on, act now, and visit their website with suggestions and ideas. Meanwhile, congratulations and many thanks to Nicky and Becky from an old supporter. And that's from Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester.
Yes, a regular letter from our Phil.
John, this is about social sneering, and it's from James Anderson. Sir, the speech to the National Housing Federation was clear. We must stop our sneering attitude to social housing tenants. Whoa, I never did have a sneering attitude. But using a virtue claim to silence and ignore genuine concerns is a ballot box loser. A small estate including an element of social housing was built in Bolton in 1991 with units selling at £40,000. 10 years later, those houses were selling at £23,000. The estate blighted by just two criminal families. The great majority of residents found it difficult to be proud in the face of official inaction. Is Bolton different? Drinking and pot smoking on the doorstep have been observed in central South Wanston. Winchester City Council wants to bust the settlement boundary of South Wanston onto Greenfield for social rentals. The provisions of rural exception are to be gamed up inappropriately to escape proper planning. South Wanston is hardly rural, with a population only slightly less than the central city wards, nor is it isolated. All of Wick, Littleton, Sutton, Scotney, Barton Stacey, Mitchell Dever, and especially Kings Barton are nearby. How is it that despite Kings Barton with its included infrastructure, South Wanston is to be forced open without added infrastructure? Claims that the development is a one-off are not believed. The most cursory look at a map shows that developments up to 200 houses on the east end of the village will inevitably follow. The behaviour of the parish council has been deeply unsatisfactory. To one South Wanston Parish Council meeting, the question was, if you don't represent us, who does? Hurrah for the parish councillor who had the integrity to resign over the authority's conduct. Who would have thought that the decline of Western liberal democracy because of its bullying, illiberal, undemocratic nature would be writ so plain in South Wanston? That is from James Anderson, Wrights Close, South Wanston.
Thank you, Barbara.
And we have some village pride.
Oh, good.
Sir, Broughton couldn't be prouder of its shop in a box. In an ideal world, of course, the village shop would have been sold as a going concern and business would have carried on seamlessly as usual. But the sad reality is that village shops are in decline. The happier upside, however, is that community shops are on the rise. Due to the imminent upgrading of the village hall, the community shop had to find alternative premises in the short term, but ultimately will have a much larger space and include a coffee shop. In the meantime, so many people have been involved in turning a simple metal container into a bright, welcoming space where, whichever side of the counter you find yourself, there are smiling faces to encourage you to sample local produce, daily essentials and farm shop goodies. The shop in a box is a local triumph, and those whose initial vision and ongoing hard work have made this a reality deserve nothing but praise. And that is from Georgie Bateman from Broughton near Stockbridge.
Barbara and Tony.
And this letter appears under a photograph of Winchester City football team in a pre-season friendly against Eastleigh. And the title is, "Come on, your local team needs you." Sir, on Saturday, Winchester City Football Club will take on Cirencester Town in the third qualifying round of the FA Cup. In this letter, I urge as many of the citizens of Winchester as possible to come down to the city ground and give their support. Southampton are not playing until Sunday, and Eastleigh are away, so this is a perfect opportunity to support your local team. A big home crowd could prove crucial in helping City in their quest to reach the fourth qualifying round for the first time since 1954, and the first round proper for the first time in their history. For those who need directions, the City ground is on Hillier Way in Abbots Barton. A discount will be on offer for Southampton, Portsmouth and Eastleigh season ticket holders. To borrow a quote from WWI era recruitment posters, your local team needs you. George Spencer, Kingsgate Street, Winchester.
Thank you, Tony. Well, that concludes our letters for this week. Now, if you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860836. That's 01962 860836. Or you can email them at email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you could write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Well, now we go on to Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment, which is about Winchester Prison. So, John, please.
Yes, the title of this is "Winchester Prison Still a Disgrace." This is part of what the Chronicle wrote last December about conditions at Winchester Prison. It stands at the top of Rumsey Road, opposite the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, but for most people, Winchester Prison might as well be on the moon. Yet the annual report by the Independent Monitoring Board, the IMB, shows what happens inside the jail should be at the forefront of people's thoughts. The IMB report reveals the continuing scandalous conditions that human beings are having to endure. Yes, the inmates at HMP Winchester, largely from Hampshire, have done wrong, but their punishment is to be deprived of their liberty. It is not to be bullied and attacked or held in the dungeon that is the segregation unit. Four deaths have been directly linked to procedural failures caused by a lack of staff. Four men who, if they were looked after properly, would still be alive. The irony is that a place where lawbreakers are punished is a place where law-breaking is rife. As John Tainton, IBM chairman, says, The bottom line is that in this age of austerity, the cuts at the prison have been too deep. There is no alternative to the government setting aside more money to ensure that the prison is adequately staffed. The jail may be behind high walls, out of sight, out of mind, but what happens there disgraces us all. That's what we wrote last December. Are we missing something? Has anything changed?
Thank you, John. Well, now we move on to Ron Ellison's column, which Barbara is going to read for us, please.
And Ron writes about a long life remembered. When wondering what to concentrate on for this month's column, I could not think of anything dafter than the news about a duchess who, as she was leaving a car, shut the door by herself. Yes, by herself, truly. The fact that the Duchess of Sussex, that's the wife of Prince Harry, in case you're not quite certain, did exactly that. There are pictures to prove it, and thereby caused a stir on the internet, left me feeling that my own news values must be a bit off kilter. But there you are. I've never watched EastEnders. But I do use a mobile phone, and so does my wife, which is why we were briefly in crisis mode at the weekend. She had bought a new phone, but had not managed to get it to work properly. Back in the shop, it was activated almost immediately, and her first call was to let me know. All as it should be. She felt equipped again for life in the 21st century, and I was happy that I could contact her at any time. It was all very 2018. In contrast, a week or so ago earlier, I learned of the death of my opposite number, the father-in-law of my daughter Sheila. He was born in 1920, so passed on just 2 years short of his century. He had no great ambition to get to 100 years of age. He was ready to go. But his death did make me think of the years in which he had lived and the vast changes he had seen. By profession, he was a shipbuilder. The family company, based on the River Clyde in Glasgow, had built small warships, destroyers and motor torpedo boats for the Royal Navy. And in 1916, Eric's grandfather was awarded a baronetcy in recognition of Yarrow's contribution to winning the First World War. The fact that the peace was not long-lasting led to Eric volunteering to join the army when Germany invaded Poland in 1939. He was only 19 and was posted to the Royal Engineers in Asia, both retreating and advancing in Burma as the war against Japan ebbed and flowed. After the war, Eric returned to the family business, married, and had a son, Richard, who became my son-in-law when he married my daughter Sheila in 1982. Tragically, he died of a brain tumour 5 years later at the age of 34. Eric was heartbroken, but still with a strong regard for doing the right thing. To add to his wartime experiences in Burma, he found himself involved in another battle, this time political. In 1977, the Yarrow Shipbuilding Company was nationalised by Jim Callaghan's Labour government, where Tony Benn was serving as Minister of Technology. Yarrow never received the payment Eric believed his company to be worth, nor did he when the Conservatives returned to government under Margaret Thatcher. This caused him great distress. Through his life, Eric was highly regarded, and in due course he became the chairman of Clydesdale Bank. He remained involved with various naval organisations and an active supporter of several charities. Thinking of his long life, I believe he would be seen as old school, deserving to be admired and recalled with great affection. His standards were high. He knew both sorrow and happiness, and he handled both with great dignity. I hope his values will continue to be found in many of us as we move towards the 2020s and beyond.
Thank you, Barbara. Now, we have a letter from Westminster, please, Tony.
Yes, from Steve Bryan. First of all this month, a warm welcome to new and returning students settling into university life this autumn. There are undoubtedly challenges of town and gown living side by side, but I think students help make Winchester the young, vibrant place we all enjoy, and I know they contribute significantly to our local economy. It was a pleasure to meet many of them at last weekend's Freshers' Fair at the University of Winchester, where I was a guest of the bustling Conservative Student Society. It's even run by students. Anyway, Hampshire Chronicle readers will now be aware of the proposal by the multimillionaire Magnier family to build 6,000 houses on land near Mitchell-Dever Station. Many of my constituents will be very angry about this, and so am I, as I wonder how many versions of no we need to say to a large-scale development in this stunning rural community. Of course this country needs new homes, but Conservative-run Winchester District is more than doing its bit. Both through its new council homes programme and a signed-off local plan. Let's remember, Mitchell-Dever's new town would be three times as many houses as Barton Farm, and a new settlement the size of Petersfield in the Dever Valley. My message to the developer is this. If you submit these proposals, you will face the same united local opposition you did last time, and the time before. And my message to Winchester City Council, who I understand must follow due process to the letter as they set about reviewing their local plan, is to rule out Mitchell-Dever later this year, when you get the chance, because it is simply not needed by any measure you or central government are working to. Turning to health, and last week we heard the CQC report that Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, which runs the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, of course, requires improvement. I dropped in last week to meet with the chief executive, Alex Whitfield, and while the report is worrying, I don't think it comes as a huge surprise because of the pressures of our emergency department has been under and the ageing building it inhabits. What we must not do in response is sensationalise the findings or join the dots in a way that draws the wrong conclusions, because many dedicated and caring people work at the RHCH and they deserve the space and the support to turn things round. And finally, thank you to those who've got in touch following my Burkas and Brexit column last month. Clearly things move fast in Brexit town, and we've since had Salzburg. But I haven't changed my view that it is the job of government to do the heavy lifting. No one voted to be poorer, and the Chequers proposal is the only serious one on the table. In the end, I will support a deal that respects the referendum result and puts practical reality for our economy and our country over theoretical, dreamy ideology. My Brexit pages and that article in full sit on my new website at www.stevebryan.com/Brexit. And that's from Steve Bryan, MP for Winchester and Charnas Ford.
Thank you, Tony. Now, Bel Garum gives us an alternative look at the news. John's going to read a piece, please.
Yes, it does, and it's entitled The City That Time Forgot. Almost 5 months ago, in the midst of the Brooks Shopping Centre revamp, Bel Garum aired its frustrations at the clock in St George's Street having no functional use other than aesthetics. The work is now complete, which has seen the building being given a lick of paint, modern signs erected and automatic double installed. God knows what half this means. Automatic double installed something doors, I suppose, at the various entrances. And Bell Garum certainly feels that the upgrade does add the atmosphere with the shopping centre, although the addition of TK Maxx seems to have helped too. However, strolling through the city centre to the Chronicle's Upper Brook Street office, Bell Garum is still bugged by the failure to get the clock working, and it appears it's not the only culprit in Winchester. Walking up the hill of St George's Street, it was noticed that the timepiece above St George's Chambers, home to Barclays Bank amongst others, also does not show the correct time. One wonders if perhaps Winchester has become the city that time forgot, although it has to be noted that the clocks on Winchester Guildhall and above the High Street are in working order. Other notable clocks in the city include those on the RHCH, St Cross Hospital and the County Council building.
Thank you, John. And the time by my H. Samuel Everight watch is 10:39:30 precisely.
Beep.
Thank you very much. Right, well, we now have something which I usually call hysterical items, but it's actually historical items, starting with Tony, please. Right.
25 years ago, Friday, October the 1st, 1993. Winchester shoppers are backing Waitrose's application for a new food store at the cattle market. According to a survey of visitors at last week's public exhibition of plans, 89% of those who completed reply slips, 459 out of 518 replies, said they were in favour of the proposed 35,000 square foot store on the fringe of the city. The overriding impression is that people like the size of the store, its location, and the fact that it is Waitrose, said project coordinator Philip Pierce. The Waitrose scheme is one of four competing for planning approval for a new food store in Winchester. Tesco is about to go to appeal over its proposal for a 60,000 square foot superstore at Bar End, and planners are also considering similar sized applications for unspecified retailers at Winnall and Pitt. Waitrose understandably believes its application is the best because it represents the most appropriate opportunity for an additional food store in Winchester. The battle for supremacy in the store wars started with the growing recognition that food shopping in Winchester was limited in quantity and variety relative to the importance, the city, and the needs of its citizens. Waitrose already has control of the Hunt's Cold Store site, but it would have to buy the cattle market from Winchester City Council. The plan would also mean the demolition of the Conservative Club, which is subject to members' approval, and of new facilities at an extraordinary general meeting. Waitrose said it has chosen the site carefully.
Tony, John?
50 years ago, that's Saturday, October the 5th, 1968. Proposals approved by Winchester City Council on Wednesday evening will increase the charge for parking season tickets from £16 to £24 and ban ticket holders from the Central, Middlebrook Street and Jury Street car parks. Consideration will also be given to introducing an automatic ticket machine in the North Walls Park. The other free car parks at Chesil Street and Southgate Street will remain without charge for the time being. However, the charge on the Gladstone Street park will be reduced from 2 shillings and sixpence to 2 shillings.
Hurrah! Barbara.
And 100 years ago, on Saturday, October the 5th, 1918... our American friends have formed a warm attachment for Winchester, and they venerate and visit in large numbers its ancient and historic buildings, the cathedral, the college, the Great Hall, or the old castle, St Cross, etc. We understand they have approached the Dean with reference to placing a permanent memorial of their association with Winchester in the cathedral. Though the scheme is not yet definite, it will probably take the form of a stained glass window on the south side, adjoining that to the Hampshire Regiment. The actual memorial will not be set up until the end of the war, but a temporary structure calling attention to the work to is to be erected on the space it will eventually occupy.
Thank you. And 200 years ago was Monday, October the 5th, 1818. Yesterday afternoon, two women were perceived coming out of the servants' entrance to the house of the Reverend Francis North in the Close with a large Cooper saucepan, which they endeavoured to conceal, and with which they made off. Ooh. Notice being given to the servants, they were pursued, taken with the property, and committed to prison. Right, we now have a look at what is on in the region over the next couple of weeks or so. The musical Salad Days is coming to the Winchester Theatre Royal next week from the 8th to the 13th of October. The Tuesday lunchtime concert in Winchester Cathedral this week features Raskel Baskaliev, piano. Entry is free, but there is a retiring collection. And Winchester Historical Society have a lecture on the 10th of October given by Professor Richard Hoyle. And the title of the lecture is Robin Hood, One Outlaw or Two? It's being held at the Science Lecture Theatre in Peter Simmons College and starts at 8 p.m. So those were our regular weekly features. Thank you all. Well, before we move on to general news, I know that many of you will be eagerly awaiting for the lighting up times for the coming week. This week, the sun will rise at about 7.15 a.m. and sets at about 8.30 p.m. And we also have an item from the news which concerns the Winchester Talking News. It's under News Roundup, and it's called Charity Move. A newspaper organisation for the blind people in Winchester is seeking to relocate to new premises. Winchester Talking Newspaper, which has 80 volunteers, provides weekly recordings of extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle to 100 blind or sight-impaired listeners, free of charge. They currently record the spoken news on property belonging to funeral directors Richard Steele and Partners. John Richards, chairman of the organisation, said, "We have enjoyed our 8 years at Chesil House enormously, and Steeles have been extremely welcoming and supportive. Also, without breaching our confidence, I can say that we have been paying a very low rent, and we are grateful to the Steele family for their considerable generosity. We are actively seeking a new location as a recording studio before Christmas 2018. As a local charity, every penny counts." Ian Steele of Richard Steele and Partners said, "Winchester Talking Newspaper have been lovely to work with, and they are an extremely important service to the local community. Sadly, due to our extensive upgrade at Chesil House, we simply need the space again, otherwise they could have stayed with us. Winchester Talking Newspaper require a building at least 176 square foot in size with access to power and a phone line. For more information, please contact 01962 808085. That's 01962 808085. Tony, you've got next item, please.
This one's the Cathedral Honours Heroic Diver Bill. William Walker, the diver, is something of a hero in Winchester. Diver Bill, as he's popularly known, led a team of divers between 1906 and 1911 to dig out the rotten foundations of the east end of Winchester Cathedral and underpin the area with more than 25,000 bags of concrete, 115,000 concrete blocks, and 900,000 bricks. Often working for hours in muddy water and wearing the heavy and cumbersome diving suit and helmet, this was no mean feat. The cathedral is celebrating his work with an exhibition which tells more of how he did it and displays a selection of items associated with the story. The exhibition will run from October the 3rd to the 31st, and there will also be a service of commemoration to mark the 100th anniversary of his death. And at 5:30 p.m. on Saturday, October the 6th, it will be attended by a number of members of his family. Invitations have been sent by the Dean and Chapter to as many of William Walker's descendants as they can find, and at the last count, well over 40 have accepted, including some from America. In addition, there will be representation from People for Portland Road, who erected the plaque on William Walker's house in South Norwood, which was unveiled by the Dean of Winchester earlier in the year, and from the Historical Diving Society. The exhibition will be available to view during cathedral opening times, charges apply, and the service is open to all.
Hey, John?
Chandler's Ford wins Village of Year. Chandler's Ford has been named the best village in Hampshire after beating Swanmore and Four Marks. Parish councillors from the village collected the award for the annual Hampshire and Isle of Wight Village of the Year. Chandler's Ford was also a runner-up in the categories of Best Open Spaces, Best Community Event and Excellence in Localism. Chairman of the Parish Council, James Dugwid, said, "This is a great accolade we were delighted to accept on behalf of the community. We were impressed by the rigour and thoroughness of the adjudicating team, which makes it particularly pleasing to have won." Former chairman Margaret Atkinson said, "This is a hugely proud moment for Chandler's Ford. Since the council was formed in 2010, its members and officers have worked tirelessly to bring about major changes for the community by refurbishing its recreation grounds, pavilions and children's play areas, as well as creating popular events such as the Fryern Fantasia, for which Councillor Mike Hughes won an Inspirational Individuals Award."
Thank you, John. Barbara.
One of the largest poetry festivals making its return to Winchester. Winchester Poetry Festival returns this week, now one of the UK's largest such events. With themes of identity and place, it will showcase some of the most exciting contemporary poets and has a strong track record of public engagement, both in schools and colleges, and in nurturing new talent. The festival takes place at Winchester Discovery Centre from Friday, October the 5th to Sunday, October the 7th. More than 40 poets and speakers are scheduled, from Ian McMillan, the Shirley Bassey of performance poetry, to Holly McNish, a former UK slam poetry champion. Liz Berry, Gillian Clark, former National Poet of Wales, and many more. There will be more than 30 events, some free, plus workshops and public engagement. The spotlight is on international poets from Syria to the Caribbean. The winner of the Winchester Poetry Prize, judged by Liz Berry, will be announced, and an anthology of poems published. Impossibly a first for Winchester, an Old Norse translation duel has been arranged between Debbie Potts and Carolyn Larrington, tackling verse from the ancient saga of Gisli. A new writing competition for 11 to 16-year-olds with a theme, Changing the World, Eco-Poems for a New Climate, is a collaboration with Winchester Action on Climate Change and commemorates Robert Hutchinson, the founder of both organisations, who died last year. Three award-winning poets, Rebecca Goss, Kathleen Jamie and Harry Mann, for whom the natural world and its environment are a vital concern, will read new work ranging from Suffolk to endangered species. There will also be a series of workshops led by Hampshire poet Robin Bolam with students and teachers from local sixth forms.
Thank you, Barbara. Tony.
Right, Villagers' Tribute to Great War Dead. Residents of Twyford have launched a book to honour villagers who died in the First World War. Twyford's Valiant Hearts was written about the soldiers named on the war memorial by St Mary's Church. Every name from the memorial is featured in the book, alongside photographs. One of the authors, Vicky Dunlop, said the idea came from our editor, Chris Pope. He wanted to remember all of the soldiers featured on the memorial. It was lucky that we had the names of the regiments that the soldiers were part of and their death date. That really helped us single out what we needed. The book was launched at a party last Friday at the parish hall, attended by 150 people, and 120 copies were sold. Vicky said, "We only had 200 copies, so it's looking like we might have to do a reprint. Proceeds will go to the Royal British Legion and St Mary's Church, and there's a lovely old photograph of five ladies, Twyford's Women's Institute members, mending shoes in 1917, and there's not a leg in sight or a pair of jeans."
It's extraordinary. John?
Yes, this is, it's apt to follow with this. War Memorial to Shine a Light on Lost Generation. A moving tribute to the dead of the Great War returns to Winchester on Monday. Box 459 was commissioned by the council as part of the Imperial War Museum's Lights Out. Created by local architect Andy Ramus at AR Design Studio, it marks the impact of the outbreak of World War I on Wintonians. It will be installed outside the cathedral. The steel light installation is inspired by the 1921 inscription on Winchester Cathedral's war memorial that recorded 459 fallen soldiers from the city area. Box 459's dimensions mark Armistice Day. It is a 1,100 mm engineered steel cube. An internal light source projects powerful shafts of light through 459 apertures, representing the city's lost generation. A further 43 apertures have coloured filters representing the fallen soldiers of the district's 43 parishes.
John, Barbara?
Charity Day Competition. A Winchester charity shop is to compete in a regional competition next week. The Naomi House store in St George's Street will welcome members from Tate Recruitment on October the 10th. Five competitors from the recruitment agency, will take over the building and attempt to raise as much money as they can on the day. They will be competing with other participating stores in the region in a bid to see who can raise the most for charity. Fundraising at the Naomi House shop will feature a cake sale, face painting, and an appearance from an unnamed celebrity. The event will take place between 9 a.m. and 4 p.m, and the shop will function as normal for those uninterested.
Tony.
Different waste deals beneficial to both. Civic chiefs say that it was in both councils' interests to bring Winchester's current waste services partnership to end. It comes after Winchester City Council, WCC, and East Hampshire District Council, EHDC, agreed not to renew their 8-year contract for services, including bin collections. As previously reported, Winchester's Environment Chief denied being left in a difficult position after the decision was revealed in a report before an EHDC meeting last month. Until then, discussions between the councils had been held behind closed doors. It means that WCC will now have to find a new partner before October 2019, when the current 8-year contract will come to an end. Following the news, an EHDC spokesman said, "Winchester City Council and East Hampshire District Council have enjoyed 8 successful years working in partnership with BIFA and ID Verde to provide waste collection and environmental services. Both councils have carried out a joint in-depth review of the current contract to determine how best to move forward after the contract ends in September 2019. At the time it was signed, the partnership was groundbreaking and saved taxpayers more than £1 million. But the outcome of the review revealed that it would be beneficial for both councils to pursue alternative options. We will continue to work closely together as councils and with Biffa and ID Verdi to maintain the excellent service throughout the remainder of the contract. Winchester Liberal Democrat councillor Mark Todd last week told the Chronicle the move leaves Winchester City Council in a difficult position. Councillor Todd added, "Waste contracts are very complex to negotiate and we are running out of time. I'm particularly concerned about getting doorstep glass recycling for people in Winchester. It's not in the current contract and there is no deal or contract with anyone from October 2019 onwards. However, Conservative Environment portfolio holder Councillor Jan Warwick said this is a great opportunity for the council to award a more responsive and efficient contract that will mean a much better service for local residents, and we will be making sure we get the best possible value for money. The partnership with East Hampshire has been successful, but there were a few problems about the sheer scale of the operation that meant it was not always responsive enough to the needs of Winchester taxpayers. We have already pledged to improve our waste collection with the promise to collect glass from the curbside. This move is further evidence that we are serious about making the service even better and more local, because that is what residents want."
Thank you, Tony. John?
Yes, now for those of you who are interested in a rugby union, here is a short sports piece. London 3, South West, Winchester 36, Battersea Ironsides 15. Winchester reinforced their position at the top of the RFU's London 3, South West last Saturday with an emphatic 36-15 bonus point win against second-placed Battersea Ironsides. They are now the only team in the league with four winners' bonus points in four games.
Thank you, John. I understood every word of that.
You're obviously not a rugby union fan.
No. Oh, I see. Sorry about that. Barbara.
Well, something a little more peaceful here.
Okay.
25,000 youngsters take up challenge. More than 100,000 books have been read by 25,000 Hampshire children in this year's summer reading challenge, it has been revealed. A total of 25,394 children took part in this year's free summer reading event, reading 100,000 books. The Summer Reading Challenge is hosted at most Hampshire County Council's libraries between July and September, encouraging school children to read over the holidays. Hampshire County Council's Executive Member for Recreation and Heritage, Sean Woodward, said, "Our young readers have done brilliantly well in the Summer Reading Challenge, and it was great to see all the mischief being created and the range of books being read. My congratulations go to all those who took part." Run by the Reading Agency, the Summer Reading Challenge is aimed at 4 to 11-year-olds.
Tony.
Right. Diocese hits recruiting targets. The Church of England has an ambitious national target to increase the number of people in training for ordination between 2016 and 2020. Nationally, the Church is on track to reach this target, with 580 candidates having been recommended for training in 2018, up from 476 in 2016. The Diocese of Winchester, that target has already been met this year, with 21 candidates having been recommended, up from 14 2 years ago. The new students come from a broad range of backgrounds and include Marianne Foster, a social worker, and Amy Roche, who previously worked for the Church Mission Society. Since September 2017, the diocese has facilitated training for the priesthood within Winchester itself, meaning that students now have the option to study part-time and closer to home. The new academic route enables students who might not have been able to explore their vocation to do so. The Winchester model provides a bespoke training course built around each student's previous experience and reflecting the areas of study where they need the greatest support. Students training for the priesthood train alongside those training for lay ministry, which has also seen an increase in numbers. Flexibility in the course enables those with work or family commitments to study alongside fulfilling those commitments. The Right Reverend Tim Dakin, Bishop of Winchester, said, "I'm excited to see such growth in the number of people in our diocese who are actively considering whether God is calling them to ordained ministry. I believe that our new model of training is part of the reason why we've seen such growth. It enables our ordinands to study in a missional context, focused on how their ministry can best reach out to and serve their community, as well as being a local and flexible course. We have built our course to meet the needs of the Church's national mission, but focused through the mission of the diocesan community of Winchester, and I am delighted that people locally have responded so positively and enthusiastically to it."
Tony John.
WINAC outlines its Green Week. A Hampshire organisation has the support of the City Council to launch Winchester's first ever Green Week. Winchester Action on Climate Change, WINAC, will organise a week of events to provide the community with a chance to showcase existing green initiatives and inspire sustainable living across the district. The programme of around 30 events includes an allotment open day, a green business fund workshop, an exclusive coffee bar, and a range of conservation activities. Winchester Action on Climate Change will also outline future plans on how to encourage people to reduce their carbon footprint. Events are aimed at families of all ages and aim to debate the surrounding topics of climate change in a calm, friendly atmosphere. It has been planned to coincide with the government's new Green GB Week, announced in the Clean Growth Strategy last year. The Executive Director of Winchester Action on Climate Change, Tom Brennan, said, "We are seeking to encourage everyone across the community, business and public sectors to get involved, help to raise awareness of the benefits of taking a green approach and inspire action. We very much hope that Winchester District Green Week would become a firm fixture in the Winchester calendar. Events will take place between October the 13th and the 20th and most will be free of charge."
I look forward to Winchester Blue Week as well, don't you?
Pink Week.
A pink week, that would be good. Yes, Barbara.
A Henry Beaufort Teachers Honoured. Teachers from Henry Beaufort School have been named winners in the Hampshire Education Awards. Three members of staff were awarded first place in the Improving Life Chances and Outstanding Contribution to Education categories. Karen Lewis and Emma Saker received the award in the Improving Life Chances category for their joint work in the school's Optimal Learning Centre. The pair have supported disadvantaged and vulnerable pupils for many years. Emma Colborne, head of the PE department, topped the category of Outstanding Contribution to Education. Parents, colleagues and students ensured that Emma was nominated following her commitment and enthusiasm. The ceremony took place in the Great Hall in Winchester and the awards were presented by BBC Arts editor Will Gompertz. Head teacher of the school, Sue Hurl, said, I am so pleased that Hampshire have introduced these awards, and I know that my colleagues would agree that hearing about the work of educational professionals right across the country was both humbling and inspiring. And there's a picture of the three winners, Karen, Emma and Emma, with their certificates on the presentation day.
Barbara. Tony?
Marking the war's end. The Romsey Choral Society will hold an exclusive performance on November the 10th at Romsey Abbey. It will mark the centenary of the end of World War I and is to feature musical masterpieces full of spiritual intensity, tenderness and sorrow. Members will perform a range of songs, including Brahms' German Requiem and Vaughan Williams' Five Mystical Songs. The gifted baritone and composer Jamie W. Hall will conduct the performance, accompanied by Richard McVeigh and Richard Pierce. Romsey Abbey's atmospheric building offers a wonderful acoustic for these sublime works. The charity event aims to raise money via one of the most recognised choirs in the south of England. About 85 singers, drawn from the local area and as far afield as West Sussex, Wiltshire and Dorset, make up the choir. Ticket prices range from between £12 and £18. Reserved tickets cost between £15 and £18, depending on the selected seating position. The concert at Romsey is at Romsey Abbey, Green Close, Woodlands, and begins at 7:30.
Tony. John, please.
Most popular baby names revealed.
Ooh.
The most popular baby names in Winchester in the last year were Harry and Olivia. Last year, 3,152 babies were born in the area, 1,613 boys and 1,539 girls. Nick Stripe of the Office of National Statistics said, although nationally Oliver and Olivia remained the most popular baby names in 2017, some fascinating changes took place beneath them. Leo entered the boys' top 10 for the first time, whilst Hunter rocketed into the top 100, also for the first time, reaching number 78. Sarah, the most popular name for baby girls throughout much of the 1970s and 1980s, dropped out of the top 100 for the first time since our records began in 1904. Brand new entries into the top 100 for girls included the names Aurora and Hallie, H-A-L-L-I-E. In England and Wales, royal references continue, with Harry and George remaining the second and third most popular names, respectively, since 2016. Amelia was the second most popular name for girls, with Isla moving up to third place. Nearly 700,000 babies were born last year in England and Wales, and over 63 unique baby names were registered.
Thank you, John. Right, Barbara.
Public asked on fire merger. Residents have a few weeks left to have their say on the future of the county's fire service. As previously reported, Hampshire Fire and Rescue Authority is asking residents their views on the possible creation of a new combined fire authority for Hampshire, Isle of Wight, Portsmouth and Southampton. A public consultation was launched in June and closes on October the 26th. After this, the feedback will go back to HFRA and Isle of Wight Council for consideration on whether or not to submit an application to government to form a new combined authority. The aim of the scheme is to have a larger bank of skills and knowledge, greater operational effectiveness, and a single point of governance. A response form is available online at www.hantsfire.gov.uk/consultation, or people can email hfrsconsultation@hantsfire.gov.uk. Alternatively, call 023 8062 6815. Translated, Braille, audio and large print forms can also be obtained. A final decision on the plans is expected in January 2019.
Thank you, Barbara. Now, Tony.
Right, well, this is another thing slightly about the fire service. Oh. Historic fire engine goes on display. The sun glistened on the freshly polished brass of the old steamer fire engine when Alresford Museum opened its doors to visitors for the first time. Over the 2 days of Heritage Weekend, more than 200 people visited the old fire station at the bottom of Broad Street to admire part of Alresford's heritage. A number of visitors commented that they never knew the fire engine was behind the big red doors, but it had to be pointed out to them that the steamer only arrived a few short weeks ago into its new home. Since its arrival, there's been much activity by volunteers, making the brass and copper shine once again, and many new artefacts have been donated, particularly fire brigade-related. Roy Gentry, chairman of the Alresford Museum Trust, said, "The number of visitors and the interest shown far exceeded my expectation, bearing in mind we were only open for 2 hours each afternoon. Because of the level of interest, we will be opening again on Alresford Apple Day, Saturday, October the 13th, between 12 and 4pm, so that visitors can come and see the old steamer fire engine. As well as objects for display, an almost new 32-inch flat-screen television appeared, which will be used to present a slideshow of old pictures of Alresford. There were also donations of £120, which will go towards the future development of the museum." Mr. Gentry added, "Over the winter months, we will be working on the display of other artefacts that tell the story of Alresford over the centuries. We are grateful for the financial support from Hellard's estate agents, and we hope to be able to open our doors in early spring as a more comprehensive local museum. For further information, contact Roy Gentry on 01962 773185 or roy@alresford.org. And there's a lovely picture of a freshly polished old steamer appliance in the old fire station.
Thank you, Tony. John.
Church's new store to help the poor. The storehouse at Winchester Vineyard Church has moved into a new and expanded space and relaunched with the help of Steve Brine MP. It provides clothing and equipment for 450 families every year, as well as 100 food bags, toiletries, as well as distributing fresh supermarket food to hospices, refuges, and individuals. The new storehouse space at Bar End will increase capacity, meeting the needs of more people and expanding its services to include training and courses such as cookery, budgeting and computer skills. The storehouse partners with over 40 agencies, where Pastor Nigel Hemming thanked them on behalf of the city for all that they do. Jenny Macareth, who oversees the Bar End storehouse, said, "We are delighted with the new space and really looking forward to using it to better support and meet the needs of people who are facing challenges."
Thank you, John. Now, Barbara, please.
Cash boost for radio. Local charity Winchester Radio was delighted to accept a cheque for £401 from the North Winchester Community Church recently, in support of its upcoming launch as a community radio station. It aims to provide a new broadcasting service for the older generation living in and around Winchester. Reverend Danny Payne Winnett, minister of the North Winchester Community Church, said, "We recognise the issues that social isolation may bring across many parts of the community, and the role that local voices and stories have in helping people feel connected. The lifeline that Winchester Radio offers is such a positive solution. that as a community-oriented church, we felt inspired to make them our charity of the year. The money raised came mostly through our annual pantomime, held at the Week Community Centre. Paul Blitz, a trustee at Winchester Radio, said, "It is really great to receive this donation, and I would like to thank the congregation and all our other donors for the hard work they've put into the fundraising. We still have a lot of work to do to get ready for the launch next year, so if any other local organisations and individuals support our positive ageing mission and would like to help, we'd love to hear from them. Currently operating as a hospital radio station and run by volunteers, Winchester Radio is seeking more sponsors and donors to enable it to relaunch as a community radio station in March 2019.
Thank you, Barbara. Well, that concludes our Hampshire Chronicle extracts for this week. Just another reminder that Mary Davis is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her number again, 01962 711 998. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams, and to our editors for this week, Anne Frew, Angela Ling, Carol Fraser and Jane Thomas. And of course, many thanks to our readers, Tony Bergstrom.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Barbara Kearns.
Goodbye.
And from me, Peter Lydiard. You please put the memory stick and the address label in your wallet when you are finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible. And have a good week. Goodbye.